Hello, and welcome to episode 53 of Booze Podcast. I'm Sam.
And I'm Ollie. And what kind of episode do we have today?
We have a girthy episode.
You said that right before we hit record, and I just wanted to hear you say it again.
Girthy.
Yeah, so we're going to...
It's such a weird word.
It is. And I think this is the third time we've said it recording. And it's not a word I hear every day in regular conversation. No. So I'm glad you're able to squeeze it in.
Really? Oh, but I'm... good job.
I didn't mean to. But once it came out of my mouth, I was like, it's just natural, you know?
Gracious.
It's late. I'm all sweaty still.
Same, because my AC is broken.
Oh, no.
Which, my window is open, so if you guys hear any weird noises, I'm sorry. And neighbors, I'm sorry if you hear some horrible details in the next hour, but tough shit. So.
It's all right.
Well, so any boozy news with you, or?
The only boozy thing I have is... just a movie recommendation, a documentary recommendation. So on this podcast, we talk about death a lot. And the other night before going to bed, Gabriel and I stumbled upon a documentary on Netflix called Dick Johnson is Dead. Have you heard of it?
Oh, I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Oh, you have heard of it? So
I have heard of it.
We watched it. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, Dick Johnson is Dead is a documentary that just came out. So a film director by the name of Kirsten Johnson did this documentary about her father, who is dealing with dementia. So she had lost her mother due to Alzheimer's. So once she started witnessing the same kind of symptoms in her dad, she thought, you know, I need to keep him alive as long as possible. And the one way to keep him alive forever is to make a documentary. So she basically documents his death. But through it, it's kind of comedic also, because throughout the documentary, they record incidents of him accidentally dying. So he'll be walking down the street and a big AC falls and hits him on the head. Of course it's not him, it's like stunt devils and stuff like that, but it is so funny. Like, it was extremely smart to put that into the documentary because it needed that comedic relief, because watching that documentary, it felt like someone was stabbing me in the heart every 5 minutes. It was extremely emotional but very beautiful. It was beautifully done, and I recommend it to anyone, even if you are very emotional like I am, because you'll laugh and cry, and sometimes you'll laugh and cry at the same time.
Aww.
It's so good.
I'll have to add that to my list for sure. I mean, we're always so death positive here, so I think documentaries like that are so important because they really make you look at the fact that we all die and kind of like cope with the fact and find your way to deal with it and understand it. Mm-hmm. So those documentaries are always so important.
Exactly. And through the documentary, you see him being challenged with his immortality also, and everyone around him like realizing, you know, we all have this thing in common, which is we're all gonna die. So it's a beautiful documentary, and I'm very happy I watched it, even though it was a little... I didn't want to, because I knew I was going to cry the whole time. But definitely recommend.
Oh, that reminds me of one of, like, my new favorite books, which is, I know I've talked about it before, but Tuesdays with Morrie. It's basically the same concept. Such a good book. So important. Like, I sobbed the whole way through, because you know how it ends, you know? But, I mean, I think things like that are just so important. Even if we don't want to face it, at some point we're going to have to. And I feel like familiarizing yourself with it as soon as possible is probably one of the best things you can do. So
exactly. And if it makes you feel any better, for those who are unsure if they want to watch it, the ending will surprise you. It has a surprise.
Oh, that's good to know.
Surprising ending.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome. I will add that to my list.
Yes. Put it up on the... up on the priority list so we could talk about it.
I will. We started watching Schitt's Creek.
Oh, yes. So,
yeah, we just now started watching it. And Matt's actually, like, into it, too. So
I'm obsessed with it. I haven't watched the 6th season because it just came out on Netflix. I think I want to rewatch it all and then watch the 6th season, which I never do. I am not a person that rewatches anything.
Speaking of, like, comedic relief... kind of, not really. So I'm in this it's gonna get a little weird.
It's not gonna be any relief whatsoever.
Well, someone gets some relief, but anyways, you'll know what I'm talking about. So I'm in this Facebook group, which is Star Stairs and Mortician Star. And so people, like, ask weird questions relating to death, and a lot of morticians are in the group, so they'll answer, or people in the death care industry will answer, but there's a lot of people who aren't in that industry that are in this group. So someone, I'm going to leave names out because I didn't ask if, you know, permission from them. So someone put, we've all seen it in TVs and movies, but has anyone actually been offered money for, quote, time alone with bodies? Or is that just a TV thing? I've always been curious if people actually do this. So I have a couple comments from actual people in the death care industry, and it gets wild. So someone put, the closest thing I ever saw was a man look around all shifty and squeeze a dead woman's boob. Like, what the fuck?
No, wait, what?
And then she put, I think he just wanted to feel what it felt like to grab a dead woman's boob. And I was like, ew, gross.
No, you're violating a body.
Exactly. And then someone put, if anyone here handles my body and my husband doesn't at least jokingly hint that he wants alone time with my body, kick him out and don't let him back in. Because that is not the man I married. And then this goes back to my relief question. And this is like the last comment I'm going to put in there. But someone put something like that. It's too graphic to say here, but the spouse of the decedent was left alone with him and we walked in to see. Yeah, you don't want to know.
Oh my god.
So then someone put sucking or jumping, and she put former. And I went, oh no. Like, are you just talking shit? Is that actually something that happened? How do you handle that? Do you call the cops?
What do you say?
If they were married?
Ask in your law class.
I should. I definitely should.
You should. Because I'm curious. Well, I guess they're not, it wouldn't be consensual because they're dead. The other party is dead.
Yeah.
But doesn't the family have the right to the body?
See, that's where it gets weird, because if you defile a corpse or you mishandle a corpse, you can go to jail. So does that fall under fucking with a corpse? Like,
literally?
Do you go to jail for that?
All these questions you've brought to the table with no answers.
I'm going to have to ask my law teacher. I'll probably get kicked out of my law class, but I will ask for you guys. The other part of me...
It's worth the risk.
The other part of me is hoping this person was lying, but I'm pretty sure this happens. Obviously, people are... Necrophilia, like, it's a thing, so...
Yeah. And I'm really nervous to Google it, so...
So, speaking of Googling, so I was going to do a case involving, like, child trafficking and stuff, like, way, way back before the whole Pizzagate thing we covered, and I typed in, like, child pornography for something, and, like, Google gave me a huge warning, and I was like, no, that's not what I mean, like, I'm trying to...
I did the same thing for that episode. I forgot what I typed in, but it was not good.
Yeah.
Outside looking in. And I was like, backspace, backspace.
I was like, no, Google, that's not what I meant. Like, freaking out that the FBI was going to come after me or something. Like, yeah. So you got to be real careful with those Google searches. If my computer has not been flagged yet, I'm sure it was after that day. But
so we mysteriously need a few days, or like don't put out an episode for a week. That's probably why, because Sam needs to get a new laptop.
Yeah.
Or I got to get Sam out of jail.
Bail me out for my damn research posts.
Yeah. It's for a podcast, I
swear.
Here,
I have notes. I don't know if that would make it better or worse. But
I know.
Goodness gracious.
Hopefully.
Anyways.
But, yeah, I was going to say, since we have a lot to cover, you want to jump in?
So, all right, let me scroll back up the many, many pages here. So, I know last episode we talked about how I went to Jacob's Well on the 30th, and the day before I went to Jacob's Well, I fell into this hole of national park disappearances and state park disappearances, which is probably why I'm full of anxiety, because right before I go to a park, I'm looking up cases of people disappearing, so probably explains a lot of my anxiety. But I found two cases, kind of three, and I just fell like deep into this hole. So are you ready for these sources? Because there's a lot.
Bring the sources.
Okay. I didn't know if I should quote this as a resource, but I found posts off of it, so Facebook. Facebook is one of my resources. Location Unknown, which is a podcast, catsu.com, medium.com, Charlie Project, imtribune.com, idahonews.com, idahostatesman.com, strangeoutdoors.com, Reddit, Fox5DC, Criminal Core, which is a YouTube channel, The Missing, which is a YouTube channel, Heavy Case Files, which is a YouTube channel, Mr. Ballum, which is a YouTube channel, and The Missing 411 book.
Goddamn.
So, I fell into a hole.
Hey, that's good.
All right. So, on October 5th, 2018, 27-year-old Terrence Shamel Woods, a freelance filmmaker, was working with a production company filming a reality show at Penman Mine in western Idaho. While the crew was wrapping up, Terrence jumped off of a cliff and sprinted into the thick mountain forest, stunning the entire crew. Before anyone could respond, Terrence had disappeared without a trace. On the same day, Connie Johnson disappeared in equally strange circumstances from Fog Mountain in Idaho, around 56 miles to the north of where Terrence took off. On Sunday, October 7th, 2 days later, at approximately 5:30 p.m., the Idaho County Sheriff's Office was advised of another missing person. 42-year-old Jose Mendoza Morales of Tacoma, Washington, left his residence and was going to Elk City, Idaho. Jose checked in with his family from Grangeville on September 25th, but no one had heard from him since. Now, he normally checked in every 3 days, and Jose at the time was believed to be driving a red and white Ford F-250. Now, I'm just going to get him out of the way as soon as we start, because I don't really think his disappearance was related, but just because it's all correlated, three disappearances within the same state park, so close together, I put him in here. So I did some digging, and I found this post on the Idaho County Sheriff's Office Facebook page, which this page will come up multiple times, which is why I put it on my resource. And they basically said everything that I've already stated, but there was an update. That Mr. Mendoza Morales had been safely located, but I couldn't find any details on where, what happened. Just nothing, just that he was found. But like I said, I just wanted to include him because of the same time frame and that we're covering disappearances here. So that's the only happy ending we're going to get out of this story.
At least there is one.
At least there is one. So the area that I'm going to give you guys a little bit of build up and background just so you kind of understand the area where they went missing. So the area that Terrence Shamel Woods disappeared from is the Penman Mine, located in Oro Grande area, which is in the larger Nez Perce Clearwater National Forest. It's in Idaho County and 8,500 square miles of mountainous region of western Idaho. The Nez Perce Clearwater National Forest are located in the heart of northern central Idaho. It stretches from the Oregon border on the west to the Montana border on the east and is bounded by the Idaho Panhandle National Forest on the north to the Salmon River on the south. It is located within the Latas, Nez Perce, Idaho, Clearwater, and Lewis counties. So that's a huge span of area. So in simple terms, you're looking at over 2 million acres spread over 4 parks.
Jesus.
Huge, huge park. Lots of places to get lost. So originally the forest was the traditional home of the Nimiipuu, which were later named the Nez Perce Indians by the Lewis and Clark Expedition. To show respect for the tribe, they named the national forest after the tribe in 2012, which that took way longer than it should have to begin with. Mm-hmm. But the mountains in this forest are also home to timber wolves, raccoons, moose, black bear, coyotes, cougars, elk, and other large forest animals. And the terrain is very mountainous in the 5,000 to 7,000 elevation range and thick with multi-year deadfall or large trees, making travel by foot difficult in areas. So it's just a huge, thick forest filled with large, dangerous animals. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about Terrence. Terrence grew up in Capitol Heights, Maryland, with his parents and 3 siblings and was a University of Maryland graduate. He lived in London for several years, attending the American International University before moving back to the USA in 2018. He was an experienced journalist who had traveled the world working on documentaries and television shows, often working in tough situations while filming. So now, when I'm talking about Terrence, I'm going to timeline everything because I don't want y'all to get confused with Connie. So we're going to talk about Terrence first and then Connie, and then we'll talk about kind of theories and what could have possibly happened. But I think the best way to talk about Terrence is to kind of timeline how the days of his disappearance kind of broke down, because it gets really weird. So in the fall of 2018, Terrence got a freelance job working for the London-based Raw TV. Now, this production company was responsible for the popular Discovery Channel show Gold Rush, so this was a big, big deal to get this opportunity. The shoot required Terrence to go to the western United States, specifically Montana and Idaho, for several weeks starting on October 1st, 2018, and would wrap up the second week of November. They were making a TV series about the abandoned gold mine, the Panam Mine, which I've already mentioned, that is located in the Oro Grande area of the National Forest. With Terrence, the crew consisted of 12 people. So it wasn't a small little group either, but it wasn't a giant large group.
Mm-hmm. He said a group of 12, with right?
Him, yeah.
With him, that
all of them were going to film and were within this area of where he went missing. So he had been on several different rugged wilderness shoots prior to this, including Turkey and Alaska. So he had experience in the backcountry and this section of Idaho, but never in the location of the mine. So he was familiar with Idaho, just not this specific spot where they were going. Mm-hmm. And friends mentioned that he didn't really want to go on this trip based on text messages before he left. Friends weren't shocked by the comments, but thought it was unusual after the fact. They said his behavior on the shoot didn't match what he was like day to day either. So I couldn't find records of these text messages, and I think because everything is still not certain, they're not releasing all these details just in case. So I definitely couldn't find those text messages.
Well, what would be the reason for them not releasing the text
messages? A lot of people think there's foul play involved.
Oh.
So.
And is it still under investigation, I'm assuming?
Well, they haven't closed it, so it's still pretty open. And you're going to see that there's going to be issues with the police department. So, you'll see. So, his father had said he had no history of panic attacks or psychiatric issues such as depression. And I kind of really want to stress this point in particular, because just because someone isn't showing signs doesn't mean they aren't dealing with something internally. And I'm just speaking from experience, because I know when I went through my whole thing trying to figure out what was up with me and figuring out I had PTSD, I shocked pretty much everyone around me. Aside from Matt, who saw everything firsthand. I don't think that's the case with what happened here, but I think it's just kind of important to stress that sometimes people don't show signs at all, and just kind of really watch your family members and talk to them and stuff.
Yeah, and even if there was nothing wrong with him prior, also the fact that he expressed not wanting to go. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe he just had that gut feeling that something bad was going to happen.
Yep, definitely. So, and I mean, sometimes you can't help it if people don't want to open up and talk about it, but it doesn't help to do check-ins on people, just send a text message and be like, hey, how you doing, and all that, you know? Definitely. Which I'm not completely 100% sold on the fact that he was having psychiatric issues and he had a breakdown, but it will come up again. That's why I'm stressing that point. So, timeline time. On August 30th, 2018, Terrence Sr., his father, dropped off Terrence at the airport in Maryland. This would be the last time he would see his son. At 10:58 p.m., October 4th, Terrence sent his dad a text. The text read, "Hey, Dad. Just got to the hotel in Idaho." During this time, Terrence was in good spirits, texting his dad pictures of the scenery and telling him everything was fine. On 10:05, Terrence landed at the Montana airport that following morning, very, very early. At 10:50 a.m. on the 5th, that same Friday morning, Terrence texts his dad a video of a serene river cutting its way through a rocky canyon. The text had no locator or words and no clues. Later, during an investigation by a Washington, D.C. news outlet, a reporter who saw the video remarked how it seemed creepy and foreboding. At 3 a.m., Terrence calls his dad to tell him that he made it and here and is okay. Not much more was said, and his dad told him that they would talk later in the day, since it was 5 a.m. for his dad at the time. The film crew was using Elk City, Idaho as a base of operation. So, and you can see he's keeping constant contact with his father, just keeping him involved with every little step.
Exactly.
So at 5:44 a.m., still the same day, Terrence texts his dad again. The text reads, "I'm coming home on Wednesday the 10th. There was no further explanation, and this would be cutting the trip short by several weeks, something Terrence would never do. Because if you remember, Terrence was supposed to be in Idaho working on the documentary until the second week of November. So now we're starting to wonder why he just was done. He didn't want to finish it, wrap it up. At 3 p.m., Terrence Sr. texts Terrence back, but the crew was already in the middle of its all-day shoot in a remote area a few hours from the hotel with no cell service. Terrence Sr. isn't sure if Terrence ever saw the text message. So late afternoon, early evening, the crew spent the day filming, and what happened next is unexplainable, according to the on-site production manager, Simon, who later recalled what happened to Terrence Sr. Simon recalls, "So we were finishing up for the day, and your son was talking to one of the miners. I was in one of the vehicles doing some work when your son told the miner that he had to go relieve himself. Something told me, kind of like a gut feeling, to look over near the cliff your son was at. When I looked over there, all I saw was the radio lying on the ground. I originally thought your son fell off the cliff, so I leaped out of the vehicle and ran over there immediately. To my shock, your son was already 15 feet down the cliff, running like a hare. I've never seen anyone run that fast. At that point, I yelled to the crew to get in the vehicle and go to the main road. I proceeded down the cliff, but your son, he kept running. Due to my professional SAR training, I stopped running after him out of fear he'd be further scared. So I went back topside, and the crew hadn't found your son on the main road. At that point, we found the first house with the phone and reported your son missing." Terrence's father recalled in an interview, the production crew, thought he fell off the cliff, but by the time he got over there, my son was 15 feet down the cliff, running like a hare. So I said, "What do you mean, running like a hare?" Simon said he was running so fast, "I ain't never seen anybody run that fast. You can't get lost out there, because if you got lost out there, you're going to run into a road or houses." So he didn't just poof, vanish, and disappear. No, he made it to that road, and someone picked him up. And then a local woman from Elk City that was with the film crew eventually corroborated the story that Simon told, and local law enforcement stated she was a very reliable witness. So it's just very strange how quickly this is all happening and how quickly it was.
How quickly it goes from him going
to relieve himself and then he's gone.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He was talking to a minor, went to the bathroom or whatever, and then just took off
running. Yeah, he went to go pee, and the next thing you know, he's running down this cliff.
Yeah.
Terrence was reportedly acting strange and was noticeably quiet. It is also reported that his cell phone was with him at the time he ran into the wilderness. So, how do I explain this? So, the cliff isn't a legit just drop-off cliff. It's kind of slanted, like very... It's steep. You can run down it. Yeah. You know how when you, like, shimmy down sideways, you can kind of, like, get down a cliff or something? It was like that, but he was just booking it straight down. No care in the world that he might trip or fall or anything like that. He just had to get down this cliff as soon as possible. So some of the crew that did try to follow him were covered in scratches and cuts and were bleeding because the rundown was full of branches and trees and rough terrain. So this was not just a cleared-out path. There was trees everywhere. It just isn't feasible to run down this, you know? Unless you had an actual reason to run down. At 6:41 p.m., the 911 call log transcript from Idaho County Sheriff's Office read, quote, "Advised the male, Terrence Woods, 27, from London, works for a TV company who was creating a movie in the area of Penman Mine. Never been in the woods, no guns. Terrence has been having a really hard time emotionally and had a mental breakdown earlier today. Dark complexion and light clothes. Terrence is not going to respond to responders per reporter. Terrence does not have communication. There are people searching for him now. So that Saturday morning, the 6th, Simon called Terrence Sr. to tell him his son is missing. Which I also find strange that they waited till the next morning to tell his father versus right when it happened. I don't know what the proper protocol is for that. Maybe they thought he would turn up again, but...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe it wasn't enough time to incite some worry in the team.
Yeah, like they thought he was going to turn up again.
But if he's having like a mental breakdown in their eyes, wouldn't they want to contact his emergency contact?
Exactly. So in addition to the detailed account of what happened to Terrence, he mentioned some issues he had with Terrence leading up to the disappearance. Simon told his father, "Terrence came highly recommended to us and was our first pick. When I met your son, you know, he didn't live up to my standards. Well, I asked him to do different things and he didn't know what to do. There were other things your son did not do that I didn't like." Which is strange to say to someone when you're also mentioning that their son is missing and their search is conducting. Why would you talk down about a missing child?
Exactly. To the parent of all people.
When they're nowhere near what's going on either and they can't just fly down there at the drop of a hat. It's very suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
So, on the 5th through the evening of the 11th, a massive search and rescue operation involving multiple counties and law enforcement agencies kicked off. Search crews on ATVs circled the area. Multiple dog teams set out to search the area. Crew on horseback and helicopter with heat-sensing technology began to also search the area as well. Conditions were extremely difficult due to the rugged terrain. One searcher commented, "You couldn't even walk through there, all the downed trees and all the brush." By midweek, heavy rain and snow in the high mountains hampered the helicopter search. After 7 days of searching, the Idaho County Sheriff's Department scaled back the search on the 11th after nothing had been found regarding Terrence. It was reported that at some point during the search, law enforcement officials went to Simon's room to make sure it was locked. However, people from the crew had already been in his room to supposedly get articles of clothing for the tracking dogs.
Why?
They just needed to get clothing, I guess. But...
If you're going through a search, or if somebody's being searched and is missing, my mind is always like, don't fuck with any of the evidence. Mm-hmm. Get a professional to do it.
Definitely. And what was extra weird to me is he had a backpack on him full of, like, travel stuff. So water, snacks, and everything like that that he was wearing with him. Why did you have to go to his room to get clothing when you could have just given the dogs the backpack to sniff that was already at that location? Or the radio that he had to handle? I don't know what the proper protocol.
Yeah, he didn't take off with his backpack?
He didn't take off with the backpack, no. His backpack was still at the thing. Because his parents ended up getting the backpack back. So why not have the dog sniff that before you go through his room and damage potential evidence or...
Exactly, yeah.
You know. Then again, I don't know how much tracker dogs have to sniff, but I wouldn't think it would have to be clothing if you have a backpack that he's been wearing all day. So.
Who knows?
Yep. All right. So. It's also been reported by the news media that law enforcement never asked for Terrence's cell phone records and never did a search history of Terrence's laptop. Both would have required going to a judge and getting a subpoena, which would require evidence of a crime or that he is endangered, which I think they already had it by reports of saying he was having a mental breakdown and the fact he just took off. And law enforcement officials concluded the evidence showed Terrence intended to disappear, which is the argument they use as to why they didn't push for these records to be searched. People familiar with cases like this said it would not have been hard to get the proper authority to do the searches. In an interview, the local sheriff said that a guy working in the search and rescue operation mentioned to them that Terrence was not in the area that was searched. And they didn't mention this man's name just in any records. So I don't know if the police... Just a guy. So I don't know if the police pulled this out of their ass to cover their tracks or what. But I don't know. It's just sketch. Even after the fact they didn't do their initial searches, that I'm kind of taking everything they say with a grain of salt. But they say it's determined that he slid down the bank and made it to the road. After that, they don't know where he would have gone. They said if he was hurt or injured, they would have found him, and if he had done something fatal, the dogs would have found him. This is by the guy. Mm-hmm. However, another officer said that he was shocked Terrence would even be able to get out of the area. The forest floor is thick with dead trees and Douglas firs that have toppled down on each other year after year. The officer described it as trying to run through a giant pickup sticks, with some parts so thick with deadfall that your feet would never touch the ground. Search teams also found no prints in the fresh snow, with no indication whatsoever that Terrence was ever there. So it's just like he vanished. Raw TV put out a statement, and they said, "We can confirm that Terrence Woods, a member of one of our production teams, went missing on Friday, October 5th in Oro Grande Nez Perez National Forest, Idaho. The Idaho County Sheriff's Office was immediately informed and they implemented a search and rescue operation. Mr. Woods is a well-liked value member of the production team and would have been working closely, and we are working closely with the Sheriff's Office, which has been leading the search. Mr. Woods' family are in direct contact with the Sheriff's Office. All inquiries regarding the status of the search should be directed to the Idaho County Sheriff's Office." And because I know you want to know this, I did find a post from the police department. So do you want me to...
Yes.
Yeah. So, it's **, update Terrence Woods search, 10/11/2018, **. On October 5th, 2018, at 6:41 p.m., the Idaho County Sheriff's Office was notified of a missing person. 27-year-old Terrence Woods of Maryland had become separated from his party, a film crew from London doing a documentary on the Penman Mines. Due to the late hours of the report, the search did not commence until Saturday, October 6th. Two Bear Air was contacted, and they were out of service for maintenance and unable to fly. Three dog teams from Clearwater County, ground searches both on foot and ATVs, personnel from the U.S. Forest Service arrived on Saturday and began searching with Deputy Stan Denham. Clearwater County Back County Rescue Helicopter also did an aerial search of the area. Fish and Game canvassed the area and stayed later into the night, checking with hunters and continuing to search. Mr. Woods was not located. On Sunday, Deputy Denham, ground searchers, U.S. Forest Services, and Fish and Game personnel and the dog teams resumed searching. Beck County Rescue Helicopter also resumed searching using FLIR to attempt to locate Mr. Woods. RAN hampered tracking efforts. On Monday, in addition to the searchers previously listed, a UH-1 helicopter from Fairchild Air Force Base responded to do more aerial searches. Searches continued on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday with the same search teams and air support. Weather did play a factor, and the helicopters were unable to fly on Tuesday. They resumed their searches on Wednesday as the weather permitted flying. The decision to cut back the active search was made Thursday afternoon. No leads were obtained from the previous 7 days of searching, and no sign of Mr. Woods had been located in the search area of the expanded search area. The Idaho County Sheriff's Office will continue to monitor the area and investigate leads. If anyone has any information regarding Mr. Woods' disappearance, please contact the Idaho County Sheriff's Office at 208-983-1100. Please be mindful of comments on this post. Mr. Woods' family is devastated by the disappearance of Terrence, and inconsiderate comments will be deleted. And I'm going to circle back to that very last paragraph towards the end. So, now we're going to talk about Connie Marie Johnson.
This is a different person.
On October 5th. This is the second person who went missing the same day as Terrence. Okay. Within 50 miles of him.
Are we
going to
talk about Terrence again, or is this...
Yeah, we're going to circle back to Terrence.
I will wait then.
On October 5th, 2018, Connie Marie Johnson, age 76, was working as a camp cook for Ritchie Outfitters based in Salmon, Idaho, in the area around Big Fog Mountain near Big Rock in Grangeville in Idaho. The area was very remote with no roads, and it was only accessible by horse or on foot. She was about 56 miles from where Terrence disappeared. Connie was an experienced outdoors person, and she had previously worked for the U.S. Forest Service Wilderness Range at the Moose Creek Ranger Station. There, she helped set up hunting trips for people. So people would come, and she kind of, because she was so experienced, she would either lead them on tours or she would help them book hunting trips so they could go out for a couple days mm-hmm. and, you know. She was also a member of the Selway Bitterroot Foundation, and she frequently led young people and other groups on tours of the backcountry in the area. Her friends said she was very experienced in the back county and knew how to survive even if something went wrong. She was last officially seen October 2nd, 2018, when the hunters left the camp. I also read somewhere that she was with a group and decided to turn back about halfway through. So I don't know which one is the exact, if maybe it was a mix of the two and it just got reported mm-hmm. differently. But regardless, the last time anyone saw her in person was October 2nd. So when the family, when the hunters finally returned to the camp on October 5th, Connie and her border collie Ace were gone. The only trace of Connie left was her jacket and her gun laid across a table at the hunting lodge, and no trace of them. Connie was about 5'7", 140 pounds, and had blonde hair and blue eyes. So Terrence was African-American, she was white. That's going to come into play a little bit too, so. A large search with searchers on foot and tracking canines were quickly deployed and involved aircraft deploying the FLIR heat technology from the U.S. Air Force, which they also did with Terrence, and the Idaho National Guard and the Clearwater County Back County Helicopter Rescue Team. Chris Atkins, a former colleague of hers, said, "This is a woman who spent literally the last 25 years of her life, most of them on foot in the wilderness alone, doing her wilderness range work. If there's anybody that has the skill sets that position them to beat this, it's Connie." But no trace of Connie was found, and the search was ended on October 16th, 2018. And this is where I said the race plays in a little bit, because there were tons of people upset on that Facebook post. Remember how I said we were going to circle mm-hmm. back to that last comment? So a lot of people were upset that they were still searching for Connie, and they continued to search for Connie for 5 days longer than they searched for Terrence. That's what I was going to ask. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So people were upset. And even when I was like, what the fuck? Why would you stop one and double the time for Connie, you know? And if you recall, they pretty much called up. Well, I already said that. And it kind of seems like there is different jurisdictions, but the same police department commented on Facebook. So I don't know how that works. If it was a department with two separate, like one office with two separate departments, I don't know exactly how that works. But I feel like, wouldn't you want to combine your efforts and search that whole area together with a big group versus splitting half and half?
I would think so, but maybe there was some decision maker or some reason behind that, which also doesn't make sense. Yeah, you can cover more ground, being aware that there are two missing people, or like having every party out there searching being aware that there are two missing people, I think would have been mm-hmm. extremely versus helpful. Versus just one. You would think.
Yeah. So 3 weeks later, Connie's dog Ace turned up at the Moose Creek Ranger Station around 15 miles from the camp, but without Connie. Ace was examined, fed, and then taken out to search for Connie, but to no avail. Ace just couldn't track her down or lead them to where she was. And now this is a little unsettling, because Connie had a recording that she had done for the Selway Bitterroot Foundation. And in the recording, she kind of talks about her experiences in Back County after relocating from Iowa years before. Which, even with all this experience, she had tons of experience, and you really just don't know what can happen, you know? And I think this is kind of, it kind of feels like a little bit of foreshadowing of, don't take for granted all your experience, mm-hmm. or, you know, because things can happen, or maybe someone affected that, but yes. I'm going to read you the recording. If I can find an audio of the recording, I'll plug it in instead of me, but we'll see. So it goes, "I don't remember really being afraid of anything. I'm a spiritual and faithful person, and I kind of gave over my life to, you know, there's God taking care of me, and I know that, but I did learn too, and I don't remember being fearful. There were lightning storms, and there was creek crossings, and there were lots of challenging things physically, but I'm naturally an impatient person, and this taught me, since I was by myself, to be very careful about where you put your feet. You know, Connie, if you get hurt here, there's no way anybody's going to help you when you're on your own. So it taught me to plan ahead and how I would approach this or that, or how I would deal with the water supply or bee stings and that kind of thing. I just love being in that place so much. It just took care of me. You know, it's pretty overpowering. It's a pretty overpowering feeling to look up into those hills, especially being a flatlander like I was. I'm still in awe of the power of those mountains and the power of the weather and the creek and just the sheer hugeness of it. And the fact that we're not in control of anything." Connie's daughter said that she can only speculate about what happened to her mother, but does not believe her disappearance was intentional. Her daughter was quoted saying, I think that she enjoyed the outdoors, which she loves, and something happened. The weather came up, she fell, I don't know, but I think that she got surprised. Given the temperature, given the lack of time, given the lack of signs of her, and the fact that Ace is not with her, all point to something. So what the heck happened? You ready to crack into these theories and what law enforcement thinks?
Of course. And then I'm ready to hear what you think. Okay.
And I'm ready to hear what you think, too. So law enforcement believes for Terrence that Terrence may have had a possible panic attack or mental breakdown, but there are conflicting reports of who said this. Some reports said that he had to be detained before his disappearance, but later accounts said that this was a debrief on the wildlife in the area and not a detainment. So did someone lie about that and plug that in somewhere? Why is there two separate accounts? A talk about wildlife is so much different than detaining someone for a mental breakdown. So, law enforcement said that he wanted to get lost. There was also that 911 call transcript that said that he had a mental breakdown where others have said he did not. So that's why I plugged in the fact of the mental breakdown, because people are saying, no, he was okay. He was just a little quiet, and other people are saying he lost his shit.
They're saying that there was a 911 call about...
In that transcript that I read, when they finally found a house after he took off... the transcript in there says that he had a mental breakdown, he doesn't have any guns, he doesn't have any communication, he won't respond to, you know, people looking for him. I was just like, where do you pull all that information if it almost seems like 50-50, like half are saying he was okay, and the other half are saying, no, he wasn't okay. Where does this report of that he's not going to respond to other people come into play?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. It just sounds like an assumption. And also, if you truly believe someone is having a mental breakdown, wouldn't you, increase the search, put more time and effort into the search, such as Google searches, text messages? What if he was showing these signs of a mental breakdown or asking somebody for help or Googling for help? How would you know if you aren't even going to try to look into it?
Exactly. And like I said, you needed the subpoena or whatever to be able to search those records. But if this was true that he was, you know, having breakdowns, you have enough evidence there to search his stuff. So if you're trying to push the mental break... you have the resources to do that, exactly. So why didn't you do it? You know? So, his parents suspect foul play, especially as the production crew and... the sheriff's office were very unhelpful. Friends and family think he may have been in an uncomfortable situation and he was trying to get away. His father went on a radio station and the topic of race came up. Terrence was a man of color, and detectives on the case responded via email explicitly denying race played any role in the investigation of Terrence. Are you ready for this? The detective further stated that they were no longer going to communicate with Mr. Woods.
You can just do that? Isn't your job to serve and protect? And serving, when it comes to serving, you have to serve. That's how you serve.
The family of a missing person, and you're just going to be like, I don't want to talk to you anymore. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, what the fuck? So.
And let's not forget the fact that they searched for Connie longer than they searched for Terrence. It's really sketch, I think, personally. So, and Terrence Wood's older sister, Sharnia Tisdale, described her brother as a bright man who is ambitious and had a kind and loving heart, and the activity Idaho County Police described is completely out of the ordinary. She said in an interview, I talked to him before he went out there, and he seemed fine. He was going out to do a job with the film crew, and he was going to come back home. Nothing abnormal, and he wasn't acting differently. We talk all the time. He is not the type of person that would just run off and do anything like this. So it seems unusual to me, but you know, I wasn't there, so I can only go by what they are saying. So there are a couple different scenarios that I did jot down here. So, of course, the suicide and mental breakdown stream that they kind of seem to be almost forcing. Terrence also liked to journal. So in his journal, there was a paragraph about the Great Reset, which he had said he was tired of traveling and was ready to head back home and settle down. And there are several entries in his journal about being tired of London life and all the travel. Law enforcement dismissed the journal as indecipherable rants and gave it back to his parents. Like, wouldn't you want to go through it all and see if you could get something from it. And if you're sick of London life and you just want to settle down, you wouldn't run off into the woods. You're not going to start a new life in the woods.
Exactly. He had intentions of
going home.
Something beyond. Yeah, going home. And he had intentions of life beyond where he was at that point and moment in life.
And speaking from experience, if you are suicidal, you don't make plans for the future. You just don't. Mm-hmm. So there was also no signs of mentions of drug use for Terrence or Connie, so that's not even in the question. And there is speculation Terrence was afraid of crew members based on possible texts to his dad, which, again, I couldn't find those text messages, which, like I said, they suspect foul play, so a lot of that stuff is under wraps. And another possibility for what happened is exposure. In October, it's cold in Idaho. They were saying snow. At some point with hypothermia, you begin to strip your clothes because you begin to feel so hot even though you're freezing. If this was the case, they would have found traces of his clothing. And I think with Connie's experience, I don't think she would have allowed herself to ever be in that position. She was so experienced with everything. She would try to bunker down, find some place for warmth. She would know the warning signs. So I don't even consider that, but it was brought up a couple times, so I threw it in there. Animal attacks. There's tons of animals on the trail, like I mentioned previously, and this seems pretty likely, especially if they were hurt and couldn't defend themselves. And I do have two more theories that are a little wacky, but I had to include them. So, Call of the Void, which is also known as High Place Phenomenon, HPP, often occurs in people when standing somewhere high. You can also experience this type of impulse when doing other things that involve high-risk danger. For example, Call of the Void can involve thoughts of urges to jerk the steering wheel and crash into something or stand on a train or subway tracks. So have you ever been driving and you're like, I wonder what would happen if I crash into this tree? Or have you ever had thoughts like that? Just passing by.
Sorry, you froze there for a bit, but I think I know what you said. Yeah, it's a thing. I saw it. I thought I was weird for thinking those things, but according to Twitter, I'm not weird because a lot of people have
a lot of it. Yeah, a lot of people experience it. So when these urges come up naturally, someone will quickly counter them. You tell yourself you'd never do that. So could something like this have taken over Terrence? I don't see how it could be applied to Connie, but you just never know. Maybe she was also somewhere up high and she had that urge. But then I think you would find their bodies. You would find something.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And then the last odd coincidence is called Panic in the Woods. And according to the blog The Paranormal Guide, Panic in the Woods has been associated with the pagan god Pan, protector of wild places, whose unseen presence inspires countless terror. Victims experience an overwhelming feeling of paranoia, such as sinister forces nearby and a sense of imminent danger. This usually leads the person to flee the area despite desperately seeking out civilization. One curiously common characteristic of panic is that people often describe that the woodlands will go completely silent, deafening the witness before the loud pitch sets sounds in a few moments later. Deafening silence and paranoia in the woods are related to the real-life cryptids such as Goatman, and other paranormal monsters known as skinwalkers. At least one article of the phenomenon has been written for Fortune Times magazine by Patrick Harper, titled Landscapes of Panic. The behavior is a common post on many paranormal forums and message boards, so you can find things like this on Reddit and Twitter and, you know. And, you know, you always hear those stories of people who are walking in the woods and they're like, do you hear that? Someone's like, no.
I hate it so much.
And it's just too quiet. Ugh. Yeah. So, but even with this, Terrence was surrounded by people. And
what would cause him to go mad and just run off?
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe he was fearful of someone on the crew and he took down. But I've read in the previous reports, there were houses nearby. They walked down the, if you ran down that cliff and you went a little bit, you would hit a main road, which is why the crew had initially tried to meet him at the main road, but he wasn't even there on the main road. So, where did you go? What happened? If it was that, where did you hide? But wouldn't the dogs be able to smell you if you were hiding under trees or logs or something?
How far could you possibly
go? Exactly. Especially when a car, you versus a car. I mean, so regardless of what happened, given Connie's experience in the outdoors, she was well equipped for their survival. Did she fall ill or did she have an accident or did something else happen that day? What caused Terrence to run off into the woods and never return? Did Terrence witness something happening to Connie in the woods and took off to try and help her? vice versa. Is it a coincidence that this disappeared the same day? Did they stumble onto something they shouldn't have? Maybe there was like drug dealers or something in the woods that they stumbled upon. Did someone pick them up? There's just so many questions. And it's just strange to me that they disappeared so close to each other on the same day and they're basically just dead ends.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. That's the eerie part of it, is that the same day and same result.
And then 2 days later, someone else disappears, but they were found. That's just a lot of granted, I know it's a huge national forest, but that's a lot of disappearances for, a 4 day span, 3 day span? What do you think?
What do you think? Like, it's odd. Yeah, it's odd. But you kind of sprinkled your opinion throughout. There's foul play. The police department didn't do enough.
Simon's comments to his dad. Who makes those comments when someone's missing?
The whole crew is just, it seems like they're nonchalant about it. Like, oh, he just went crazy. And then he was fine, but no big deal. Or
they can't get their story straight. And the fact that he wanted to wrap up the filming so quickly versus staying the whole extent, I think he only wanted to stay 5 days versus, like, that month.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I found a tweet just a while ago from Rochelle Newman. It says, "My friend Terrence Woods Jr. went missing on the 5th of October, 2018, whilst filming with a UK production company. It has been almost 2 years, capital letters, since anyone has seen or heard from him. Please retweet to raise awareness of his story. It would mean a lot to me and his family." And she also shares a GoFundMe. It seems that the family is trying to raise money to get a private investigator to see what actually happened. And there's just like a great little clip of him and him recording and filming, which is the first retweet on Boo's podcast. If you want to check it out, we're gonna make you go to our dead Twitter to see this video clip.
And I'll be sure to, if you send me that link, I'll be sure to post it in the show notes and stuff too, so you guys can check it out. With that being said, I do have a recent 2020 update.
From who? Of who?
On Terrence.
Oh, okay. Well, damn, this tweet was in August 4th, 2020, so let's hear
it. It's not really, like, insightful, but it is an update to the case. So, in the wake of the ongoing Black Lives Matters movements, it prompted an in-depth report on the case by Dateline, which I didn't watch, which I probably should have given all the resources, but Terrence Woods Sr. previously stated to Fox 5 in an interview, "My son saw something, heard something he shouldn't have seen or heard and didn't like it. My son is not in the woods. Someone picked up my son. What for? What's going on? That's what I need to know. My son is not in the woods." So because of Black Lives Matter and because of the huge movement and the push, and we've seen so many cases be brought to life, because of Black Lives Matter, this is now getting more attention. It's still not that heard, because I had no idea about this case. Do you know anything about this case?
No, I didn't.
And I know that with a lot of, like, the whole push of Black Lives Matter, there's been a lot of cases that are already very highly publicized that have been pushed. And when I found this, I knew I had to push it, just because I haven't heard of it personally. And I feel like this is one of those cases that does need a voice. So they are trying to restart this. They're getting more interviews now. They're looking into it more. But definitely send me the link to that GoFundMe, and I will put it in the show notes for everybody. And I was going to give the police department's phone number, but I don't trust them. So I didn't put it in there. If you guys really care, it's 208-983-1100. But I think we should send, if you guys have any information at all, I would contact his parents through that GoFundMe or something versus the police department, because things seem a little sketch right now. So
not all police departments, but it does seem they mishandle it and they didn't have a lot of intentions on properly solving it right away.
Yeah, that is my story.
Oh, dang. There was a Zoom meeting on October 4th.
Oh, dang.
2 days ago.
Dang, that would have been good to sit in for.
Okay, I'm texting it to you.
At least, maybe it's recorded. At least I know that they are actively searching and still pushing and still trying to get information and gather information. So this is still an ongoing case. So if y'all have any comments or theories, just please be respectful of the family. I know I threw a lot of weird scenarios and stuff out there. I just want to kind of let you guys know all the different sides and angles that are coming into with this. But definitely, if you guys can help, go check out their GoFundMe. If they have any more Zoom meetings, mm-hmm. we'll be sure to link them. Just, you know, we need to figure out what happened with these guys. So,
yeah, it's been 2 years. So this, and then, like you said, it's starting to get attention more, and as it should. Mm-hmm. So even if the outcome is that he is dead, then at least that gives the family
closure,
information, and yeah, peace knowing what happened to their son, and hopefully justice, and yeah, justice for him and the people who have a hand in this, mm-hmm. you know, suffer some repercussions. Yeah,
and if no one else did have a hand in this, I mean, you can also raise awareness for mental health and all those things too. So mm-hmm. we'll see. I mean, always best hopes and wishes that he is alive and okay and out there living his best life, but you know, until we know, we won't know. So
yeah,
bummer.
I know, big bummer. Oh my god, I think I have a meeting with your mom. It said your person has joined the meeting.
Oh shit, well, you want to go?
Oh my god, text her right now and be like, hey, we're wrapping up recording.
Let me call her, hold on. Ollie and my mom are going to talk about her having the sex talk with me. So
it's for research. So I'm so sorry to cut this short. I could have sworn I scheduled it for Wednesday. Cut that out so she doesn't hear that.
She doesn't even listen. All right, guys. Well, Ollie has a date with my mama, apparently. So thank you guys so much for listening to episode 53 of Boost Podcast. You can find us on all our resources at Boost Podcast, which is spelled
BOOZ
Podcast. PODCAST. And we'll catch you next time. Bye.
Yes, bye.
Stay boozy.